If you've never heard him speak before, the first time you hear him speak, it's very difficult to understand what he's talking about. Usually it's hard because we've never heard things like this when we first do. Most places you go and listen to the Dhamma, they just talk about meditation and talk about morality. But they don't usually talk about the path of wisdom. Some people even tell Longpa, some of the teachers, other teachers say, you're teaching stuff that's too hard for lay people. People can't even be moral, can't do meditation. Why are you bothering with teaching wisdom practice? It's too hard for regular people. But the truth is that if we're just regular lay people, but we want to be free from suffering, we can do this. There really isn't any difference between a monk and a lay person in that regard. It's just the monks have more rules. They have to follow. But still, most of the monks are just people, just ordinary people. Just like us. We can develop, keep developing just the same, but in the past, the monks had more access, more opportunity to learn the important teachings. They had teachers that would develop them, but now we all have the opportunity just the same. And it becomes possible for lay people to practice, and their body might be not the body of a monk, but their heart is the heart of a monk, of a true monk. Dhamma has no male, has no female, monk or layperson. There used to be female monks too. This level of male, female, monk, female monk, not monk, this is all just the little level of materialistic, superficial level of things, not what the Dhamma is. So, just five precepts is plenty for a layperson to practice and attain enlightenment. Taking alcohol or intoxicants makes us lose our mindfulness and awareness. It ruins our concentration. It's almost like a different group on its own. There's four precepts that are about not causing harm to others. And the other precept is more about keeping our being able to concentrate and have mindfulness. We sacrifice that if we take intoxicants. We can also easily break the other four precepts when we break that fifth of intoxicants or alcohol. Why is it good to keep a moral code? That's because it helps us to have good concentration, good meditation practice, and samadhi. But even in the Buddha's time, there were bad monks or bad people at that time, that they had good samadhi, or at least good meditation abilities or concentration abilities, but they didn't have morality. And if you have good concentration but bad morality, you might be able to have powerful abilities. And if you don't have proper ethics, it can be very dangerous when you have powerful abilities. You can harm people and do terrible things. If we don't have morality, then defilements rule, run the show. Right? Greed comes up, we can just steal and take advantage of people. Greed runs the show. Sometimes anger runs the show, and we hurt, harm, or kill. Sometimes our defilements are stronger than we are, and that's why we need to remember a moral code. If we have mindfulness, we don't have to remember. If our mindfulness is strong enough and defeats the defilements, then we won't do anything immoral. But sometimes we're not strong enough and our defilements are stronger than us. And for those cases, we have to remember the five precepts and not break them. Let's not do what the defilements want us to do. So if we have this moral code and follow these precepts, then we'll be much more happy and concentrated. When there is samadhi, defilements, when we have proper samadhi, defilements can't come in and take over the mind. There aren't hindrances that come into the mind. Impurities don't arise when there is correct samadhi. And the mind will be of high quality, and our moral code will make sure that we don't do anything. We won't do anything harmful as a result of the impurities if we keep the moral code. The samadhi helps us not have the defilements. Our morality helps us to not have any of our defilements move out into the world and harm anyone. And our samadhi helps us have the defilements not harm our own mind and keeps us free of any hindrances from within. Now, practicing wisdom is knowing the truth of rupa and nama, this body and mind. People who are searching for the end of suffering, there are so many people that were looking and are looking for the end of suffering, but it was the Buddha that found the way out with all the different attempts from different people and teachers. Some people think that we're free of suffering if we get what we desire, if we get what we want. Right? You have to be awesome at getting what you want, you know, being able to, one moment there's a desire, I want this, and then get it immediately. I want that, get it immediately. Get everything you desire in a moment. Some people think that that's the way to end suffering. But then we start to see that there's no end to desire this way. Desires just keep coming and keep coming and keep coming. We never free ourselves this way. So then those people that finally see that, they think, okay, well, maybe what I have to do is starve this desire then. Do the opposite. Just allow... Don't allow ourselves to do anything that we desire. And this is some sort of self-torture, resisting anything that we want, forcing the mind to not do what the desires want it to do, hoping to, not allowing any sense desires, hoping to dissolve desire. But the Buddhist way is not about getting everything we desire, and it's also not about torturing oneself and not giving ourselves what we desire. It is the middle way, the Buddhist way. All these other practices were around before the Buddha. But the amazing thing about the Buddha was realizing that we have to know and study the body and mind. Amazing to realize that. That's why it took many, many lifetimes and many, many practices before the Buddha was able to become the Buddha and realize this truth. As we start to see the truth of the body and mind, we start to get dispassionate towards this body and mind. And we get, once we get dispassionate towards this body and mind, the world, we can release from them. So let's have mindfulness to see the body and mind as they really are, with a mind that is impartial and stable. And what does it mean to see things as they really are? It means to see the three characteristics. Who's watching their body and mind every day? Raise your hand. Not all day, but every day. Have a mindfulness to know the body and mind as they really are. But in order to see the body and mind as they really are, we have to have a mind that is stable and impartial. In order to be able to do this, we have to practice to make this mind one that has the stability and impartiality. That's the correct type of concentration or samadhi. He teaches this every day, how to get the mind to be the stable mind. The stable mind is the opposite of the mind that is not the stable mind. When there is not instability of mind, there is stability of mind. So our tool is mindfulness. Mindfulness is the thing that sees or knows what the mind or body is doing. When our mindfulness sees the mind that isn't stable, then the mind will be stable temporarily. How does it work that we can become the stable, we can have the stable mind once we see the unstable mind? It's because the mind that is not stable has hindrances and impurities in it. There's a dissatisfaction with whatever state is there. There's a busyness or restlessness of mind that is going out to do something. There might be skepticism or curiosity when the mind is not stable, because the mind is going out to find something else to do. There So there's some type of busyness of mind or restlessness of mind going on when the mind is not stable. We have to have a mind that is restless and going out in order to have an unstable mind. So this is the real enemy of the stable mind, is this unstable mind that is comes about because of restlessness. So this mind is an impure mind, and when mindfulness sees an impure mind, the impure mind disappears and is replaced by a wholesome one. So there won't be unwholesomeness when there is mindfulness, and there won't be mindfulness when there is unwholesomeness. They don't coexist in any moment. So if we see this restlessness of mind, and there are six ways the mind can be restless. One is in thought, and the other when the mind moves to the other five senses. Sometimes we have our eyes closed, our ears are closed, but our mind still moves to think. In fact, our mind moves to think more than it does anything else. And if we're able to see the mind move to think, we'll be able to be mindfulness. We'll be able to be mindful all day, because it's what it does the most, this mind of ours. Sometimes the mind moves to see. It moves to the eyes to see. For example, if somebody comes in late into the meditation hall now, all our eyes will go to this person walking in. We'll forget about ourselves. Our mind will go out to the thing we see. The mind is restless and not the stable mind. If our eyes aren't blind, our eyes will go out to see. Our mind will go to the eyes to see. Sometimes our mind will go out to smell something, right? But usually the mind doesn't go out to smell ourselves, because we're used to our own smell. And the mind doesn't go out, it doesn't go out to that. But then some other strange smell or big smell comes by, and the mind will go out to the nose to smell it. Right? How about the tongue? There's all kinds of tastes coming up the tongue. Can we taste our saliva? We're used to it, so our mind doesn't normally go down to notice the taste of our saliva. But what if it's somebody else's saliva that goes in our mouth? That will be taste. Our mind will be going to taste. So if we're able to see the mind moving to these different channels, the senses and thought, then we'll have a stable mind easily. How about the TV? We watch the TV, our mind will go to the eyes to look, and then our eyes will go to the ears to hear, then our mind will go to the mind to think. People who don't practice mindfulness will think that we're hearing and seeing and thinking, and it's all going on at the same time. They don't realize that it's interchanging between seeing, hearing, and thinking. Take a look at the Buddha image behind him. Can you see that we see the Buddha image clearly just for a moment, and then it gets blurry, and then we have to move our eyes again to make it clear again. And then it gets blurry again. And then we refocus our eyes, we move our eyes again to see it clear again. So all we really do is see for a split second, and then we don't see, it gets blurry. And then we have to look again, and then it gets blurry, and then we have to look again. When the eyes get blurry, we're busy thinking, we're not looking, the mind is in thought. All we're seeing in front of us at that time when we're thinking is a memory of what we saw. We're not actually seeing. The mind isn't at the eye seeing. So when we just see for a moment, and then the mind goes to do something else, goes to another channel, usually to think. Sometimes you might be looking at Lung Pa. Sometimes you don't see him and you're thinking about what he said, or you're listening to what he said. There are a lot of us just busy thinking and not listening to what he's saying. Some people want to go to the washroom already, right? And so the mind will go and think about that. He said he heard one of us laughing over here. So let's notice and see the behavior, see the mind doing one thing, and then that disappears, and then it goes and does another thing, and then that disappears. Like the mind moves to the eyes, disappears to the ears, disappears to thought, disappears. We get lost in thinking. We have a body and we forget we have a body. We have a mind, we forget we have a mind. When we're listening, we have a body and we have a mind, but we forgot that we have them. Yeah, we forget these things when we're thinking too. So when we're lost in seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, touching, we know what it is that we're making contact with, but we don't know that we have a body and a mind. The body's sitting, we don't know so, for example. So it's hard to know the body and the mind when the mind isn't a stable one. When we're busy in sense desire and the mind is moving out to the senses and interested in gaining pleasure from the senses all the time. It's a restless mind. Right? Sometimes we'll hear a couple people talking over there, and then, oh, what are they talking about? Our intention goes out to what you're hearing. We forget about our mindfulness. We lose mindfulness. We forget that we have a body and a mind. The mind is lost in sense desire and the senses. So what do we do about this? Well, there's nothing we can really do about this. This is what the mind does. It goes to where it normally goes to, what it has the habits of doing. That's what it does. So we build a new habit of seeing the mind doing this. Get to know these phenomena of the mind moving out to this and that. We get to remember precisely what each of those states look like, and we'll become more mindful more often. Right? So the mind gets angry, we know that it's... If we're somebody who gets angry easily, let's watch anger, see anger come. See when it's there, see when it's gone. If we're someone who's greedy, let's watch desire all day, see the desire come up, see the desire disappear. When the mind is happy, unhappy, let's know when it is. If the mind is suffering, let's know that it's suffering. When the mind is indifferent, know that it's indifferent. When these things disappear, know they've disappeared. If we're not good at being able to assess our own mind and what's there, then we can feel the body instead. See this body moving and breathing, standing, sitting, walking, lying down. If we see the mind move out, then the mind that doesn't move out is the mind that sees it. So we have the stable mind. So we can watch the body if we're good at watching the body. If we can notice happiness and unhappiness, we can notice them if we're skilled at doing that. Let's watch the happiness and unhappiness come and go. And let's try to practice to have correct samadhi, seeing the mind move out. When we're practicing and seeing all these things coming and going, it'll feel like things are moving in the center of the chest. Sometimes this moving in the center of the chest, something will pop up, happiness. That'll disappear, and something else will pop up, unhappiness. It comes out from the center of the chest, all these feelings. actually, if you take a look in Buddhist commentary, it says it comes from the heart, but it doesn't come from the heart, not the physical heart. It comes from a place in the center of the chest. Are we able to notice where the defilements come out? Like we want to speak, for example, there's a feeling of wanting that comes from the center of the chest. It comes out from comes out of an emptiness, of nothingness. There's nothingness, and then it comes out of the nothingness and goes back into the nothingness. It disappears back into nothingness. We'll see that these things come up and go, and we can't choose what it is that comes up and what goes. One moment the mind is stable, one moment it's unstable, it's restless. We can't decide what the mind is going to have in any moment in it. So the mind is not us. We can't force it. We can't control it. But the mind is something that is able to practice and gain new habits. And that's what we do. We put in the correct causes to get the right results. So we can't order the mind to be smart or to be wise. But we can take the mind to study and see the truth and build the right habits, and then it'll become smart and wise on its own. It'll do what it's, the mind will do what it's used to doing. So let's get it used to practicing mindfulness, knowing within the four foundations of mindfulness. We practice watching the body, then just the body will move just a tiny little bit and we'll see it automatically. We'll be mindful of it automatically. We'll get true, genuine mindfulness, the kind that comes without intention. And when that mindfulness comes, there'll be samadhi in that moment as well. But samadhi can arise, or concentration can be there, whether the mind is wholesome or not. But mindfulness, the mind is always wholesome when it is mindful. So let's really get to know this moving mind, the mind moving out to the senses or to thought. So we can watch the body, and that's fine, and we can see lots of things. We can watch the body and the sensations, but that's still a little bit far from where nirvana happens, from enlightenment happens. Enlightenment happens in the heart. So if we're able to notice the heart, let's notice what happens in the heart. It's much closer to where enlightenment happens than the body is. But at any time, if we're not able to effectively see the mind, then we go to the next step and we see the body. The mind will start to get wise. And it'll be very mindful of seeing the mind come out, go out, and it'll become very stable. Just this, it mind moves out just a little bit and it sees it, a little bit again and it sees it, in succession like that. Very powerful mind. His teacher, Lungpu Dun, called it the mind being sent out. He'll say, don't send the mind out. But the way to not send the mind out is know that the mind is being sent out. We have to see the mind working just like the eyes see an object. The mind knowing an object is analogous to the eyes seeing an object in the world. We just see it. We start to gain wisdom, and when we have this samadhi, and we can see one moment the mind goes out, the next moment it's aware. One moment it goes out, the next moment it's aware. We start to see the impermanence, that this mind is something that is out of control and isn't us. if we're able to see that this mind of ours isn't us, then nothing in the world will be us. But there is no best way of practice, because each person is an individual case. For Longpa, watching his own mind was the best for him. But for some of us, watching the body is going to be the most effective for us. Some people, watching the sensations is the most effective for us. In the end, it all comes down to seeing the mind. But we all have different entrances. Was that a hard Dhamma talk? He feels like that was a hard one. Anybody think it was hard? Put your hand up. How about easy? Was it easy? Put your hand up. Yeah, no one's courageous enough to put up their hand. Some people put up their hands and thought it was easy, but their minds are still busy and restless. It wasn't really as easy for them as they thought. Who was laughing? What was just laughing? The body was laughing, wasn't it? What's nodding? The body's nodding. Keep being aware. Soon mindfulness and concentration will arise. See this body and mind working. See them not us. The happiness and unhappiness are not us, and the wholesome and unwholesome states that come up aren't us. We'll see the mind too working all by itself, and see there isn't an us anywhere. Time. Keep practicing. It's 8:00. Time for the meal.